San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right, good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you live from La Valencia tonight with It's Your Money and Your Life. With 50,000 watts of power, we're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, LA County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night, out to the desert, Riverside County, and all over the place. And if you have an app, you can hear us on AM 760, 760 app. And also, we are streaming on 760KFMB.com. And now time to introduce the main man of the hour. He is an accomplished marathon runner. He is a best-selling author. He is a family office expert to several high-net-worth families, all-around good guy. His name is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you tonight?
I'm marvelous, Joe, for the first day of winter.
Yes, it has been a little. I'm fighting off a head cold, by the way. So we're gonna get through this. We got
some doctors in the room. So
yes,
right.
Yes, we do. So anyway, what's the latest and greatest? Any recent runs or anything like that?
No, I went out at low tide before the sunset, and ran about 5 miles before I came over here.
Wow,
I thought that's a good thing to do on the first day of winter.
Yeah,
in San Diego.
Great.
So anybody streaming us live back east.
Yeah.
Tough luck.
Yes. Anyway, last week we had Brian and Jerry Monahan on. Brian was a famous trial attorney who came down with cancer and survived. He had given 3 months to live, and in 1998, and he's a miraculous miracle of science, if that can be redundant, of course, with the love of Jerry, too. But it's a great segue for tonight's show, because tonight we're going to deal with the biotech, biomed, life sciences space here in San Diego, which is a big part of economy. And I guess we should get right into the show, shouldn't we, Richard?
Joe, introduce our guests, because we have so many.
Our guest tonight, he was the first president and CEO of Biocom, appointed in 1999, accomplished in the sphere of life science, a 30-year career in government, biotechnology, corporate sectors, very accomplished, had his undergraduate degree in biology, master's of public and health and industrial environmental health from the University of Pittsburgh, graduate of the Brookings Institution and the Harvard Program on Negotiation, ran the Rock and Roll Marathon in 339 10 years ago, and a bunch of other great things. And his name is Joe Panetta, CEO and board member and president of Biocom here in San Diego. Welcome, Joe. How are you tonight? It's on. Just put our...
I'm doing great, Joe. It's good to be here. Thanks.
Wonderful. There's so much to talk about tonight. The reason we booked you and our other guests tonight is because I guess there's a financial crisis facing medical research here in town. Is that correct?
I think there's been a financial crisis facing medical research for a number of years now, because what we've seen primarily at the basic research end of things is a constant decline in the funding that we receive from the federal government, primarily through the NIH. Mm-hmm. We saw a dramatic increase in the 1990s, and since about 2000, inflation adjusted, we've seen a decline.
Hmm. But Joe, can you tell our listeners what Biocom is? Because a lot of people don't necessarily know what this great organization does here
sure,
in San Diego.
Sure, thanks. Biocom is the Life Science Community Association for Southern California, and we're headquartered here in San Diego. We have about 600 members, and those members include research institutes, life science companies, the service providers that work with the life science industry here, and our mission is to advocate for the life science industry. So we do work here in San Diego at City Hall. We have an office in Sacramento. We work with the legislature there, and we also have an office in Washington, D.C., where we do a lot of work with some of the sister organizations that function in life sciences and pharmaceuticals and medical devices.
And then you must help out with some networking amongst all those companies, right? I bet some people have collaborated as a result of your organization.
Absolutely. And a couple of the other functions of the organization are to bring people together to help to raise capital for companies, mm-hmm. To bring people together to network at conferences and other kinds of meetings that we do, so that we can hopefully put together more partnerships and help people to do everything from hiring the people they need to work in the laboratories and to run the companies, to getting them funded, even getting out a basic understanding in the community of what a biotechnology company does.
Mm-hmm. What are some things that maybe our government, state, local can do to entice more people in this space to San Diego? Are there some, I guess, obviously financial incentives or tax abatements or things like that? Can you talk about any of that?
Sure. And there are a number of things that our state government's been doing in the last year or two that have been real helpful. But, you know, if I go back 10 years, California is really exceptional among all the states because about 10 years ago, the voters in California passed an initiative to fund stem cell research, $3 billion over 10 years to fund stem cell research. You don't find anything that comes close to that anywhere else in the other 49 states in the country. So that investment is paying off in terms of some of the work that's being done here in places like the Sanford Consortium for stem cell research here in San Diego, grants that go to the universities and the other research institutes here. So there's some positive things like that have been happening. This governor's been very good, actually, to the biotech industry from the standpoint of reducing some of the unnecessary state inspections that take place in biotech companies, because the federal government already does those inspections, so there's no need to have duplicative inspections, and those are costly for companies. Mm-hmm. So as long as you can take care of it in a safe and efficient way through federal inspection, you don't need to duplicate it at the state level. So that's been good. Mm-hmm. Another incentive that the governor signed actually about 3 months ago here in San Diego is a state sales tax exemption for the purchase of research and development equipment and manufacturing equipment. And that'll kick in about midway through 2014 for companies here in California. Here in San Diego, there's some basic things. There's a group down at City Hall that helps biotech companies to get their permits for construction through the review process more efficiently. And you know, there are a lot of complexities that go into building biotech facilities, everything from storage of chemicals to fire inspection to noise abatement and air handling systems. They're very different from traditional office buildings, so we have special people downtown who focus just on those kinds of things as well.
So how many labs would you say in San Diego County?
Well, the last time I checked with anyone in real estate, we had somewhere in the neighborhood of about 16 million square feet of laboratory space in San Diego County.
And how does that compare with other cities, would you say?
Well, you know, we're the number two biotech cluster in the country. So
Boston number one, or where's number?
Yeah,
one?
Our PR people say that I'm not supposed to use the B word.
Oh,
so
okay.
You can say that, I can't.
Yeah, but where's a better place? Who's
exactly
got snow tonight, right?
Exactly.
We're living in paradise.
Yeah, but their baseball team wins the World Series.
Well, that's okay. But they're not curing anything over there.
So, Joe, what about funding at the federal level? We had a recent federal budget deal, which was actually sort of rudimentary. What's that going to mean for NIH?
It's going to mean a slight increase in funding for the NIH, but still, you know, the NIH, the budget for the NIH is about $30 billion a year. It's essentially been $30 billion a year for the last 10 years. So we see these slight increases. They really don't overcome inflation, and, you know, it's a tremendously challenging process to get the grant funding here to San Diego. We get about $750 million or so a year in grant funding from the NIH here. About $1.5 billion altogether comes to California. So we do well, but it's a constant challenge in the face of things like sequestration, where hopefully, you know, we won't have to deal with that after this two-year period in which we're not going to have to deal with it for the first time. NIH is a big challenge for us, and always has been. We're constantly lobbying in Washington for increases in NIH funding. The other thing about NIH funding that I think is really important is that the grants that scientists obtain for the work that they do here in San Diego, typically the average age of a first-time NIH grant recipient is about 40 years old. So think about that in terms of a fledgling PhD who's just beginning to do research, probably 32 years old or so, 8 years before you get your first NIH grant. It can be discouraging, and it can be a tremendous challenge. And, you know, sometimes we lose these folks from the research institutes, and it's because of the fact that we see such a challenge. So it's important. When you're the number two biotech cluster in the country and you have the number of research institutes here in San Diego doing what they're doing, NIH funding is important. There's another aspect as well to NIH funding that goes to the private companies. Venture capital firms like to invest in research that is NIH funded because it's a more secure investment from the standpoint that you've got peer review at NIH that's mm-hmm. taken place on these grant applications. So they've already gone through a process of somewhat assuring them that, you know, this is a somewhat secure investment to the extent that venture capital is a secure investment.
Mm-hmm. And there was one question about the impact of the life science community here in San Diego, including universities, research institutes, and various types of companies. So how big of an impact footprint is it here?
It's about 50,000 jobs. And when you combine the life science community here in San Diego County with the community in Orange County, together we're about 100,000 jobs. So we like to look at the cluster in terms of Southern California. About 600 or so companies. Average company has about 25 or so employees. So these are small businesses for the most part. Mm-hmm. These are great jobs. They, on average, biotech jobs are paying about $80,000 a year. Mm-hmm. Now that's across the board in a biotech company, you know, from PhD researcher to someone who's working in the accounting office, about $80,000 a year on average.
Do you think the Salk Institute was the catalyst that really put us on the map to attract a lot of biotech here?
I think strong biotech centers have strong research universities and research institutes. So I think it goes back to a combination of the establishment of the Salk Institute and the establishment of UC San Diego as primarily a biomedical research university. That combination. There were some other things that happened in the late 70s, changes that allowed for universities to actually cash in on intellectual property through the Bayh-Dole Act and research institutes as well. So more technology transfer began to take place. And that was about the time that companies here in San Diego, like Hybertech, got started.
Interesting. Well, let's take our break right now. We'll come right back with more of It's Your Money, Your Life, live from IV right after this. Hang on. We are back with the president and CEO of Biocom here in San Diego, Joe Panetta. Welcome back, Joe and Richard. Let's see, this next segment here. Joe, let me ask you, does Biocom put on events? Let's just say someone's interested in learning more about the biotech sphere. Anything for the general public to, if they get in biocom.org?
Absolutely. So we've got events that we do that the general public can attend. Every quarter we do a breakfast meeting at one of the hotels. It's a great panel that we put on each quarter, and members and non-members can come and have breakfast and listen to an hour or so discussion on some aspect of the biotech industry. We also have a course that we sponsor. We call it the Biotech Primer. It's basically biotech for non-scientists, and you can sign up for this course, and there's a fee for it, but it's a couple of days, and you learn everything at a very basic level about the biotech industry and some of the terms that sort of the secret language that we speak in biotech.
So, Joe, do you guys do those presentations in plain English? I ask because on Tuesday I dragged Joe Vecchio along to the UCSD Supercomputer Center, where we had some people who I think had supercomputers for brains presenting, and those commoners among the crowd, myself included, had a hard time following.
Yeah, you know, I think this is the thing, and something that can become pretty complex if you're not a scientist. But we try to do a number of things in plain English. For example, at the end of this coming March, we'll have an 8-day festival of science and engineering that we sponsor here in San Diego. And the events take place throughout the county. They're for the public, for students, for teachers. You can come and hear from people who work in the life science industry and who work in engineering as well. And then that all culminates with a Science and Engineering Day at Petco Park, a full day free for the entire community to come out. And the companies and the research institutes and universities set up tables and their hands-on exhibits and displays. And we try to do as much as we can to get the general public engaged.
And Joe, what kind of advice do you give to a young person, say a college student who thinks they want to make a career out of being a research scientist or something related to? Because I know it's extra education. It costs a lot of money. Maybe you come out of college in debt. If you ever want to have your own lab, it takes forever to get funded. And it might not be until your late 30s, early 40s before you ever get that. So it can be a real, real challenge because it's such a long time frame for somebody to really make a difference.
Well, it is, and I think one of the things that we tell students is that when you go to work in a research lab, that you know, there isn't a lot of glamour in it, but we see some of the great accomplishments that have taken place here in research institutes and universities and companies in San Diego, and you know, there's a tremendously rewarding feeling for students who have this desire and this passion to want to make a difference. And what better way to make a difference than to go to work in an industry that is working to try to develop therapies and diagnostics to cure some of the diseases that we've been trying to cure for hundreds of years. It's a great industry to work in, and I think it's something that we're always encouraging students to take a look at through different kinds of programs, a scholarship fund that we have. And
of course, they have internships, too, so you can get in there
internships
early.
Internships,
right?
As well.
And find out if it's your passion or not.
Yeah. One of the things we found is that if you don't get kids turned on to science by about the sixth grade, it can get very, very difficult after that to keep them focused on science.
Yeah, science and math, I think, are underemphasized in school now, unfortunately. I mean grade school, junior high school, et cetera.
Yeah, it can be easier to go into the social sciences and not have to deal with, I mean, I can remember when I was in college as a biology student, you know, all the studying that we had to do, and sometimes you'd think, well, gee, I can go, you know, and become, I don't want to pick on some other major, but a non-science major.
Pick on accounting.
Go ahead, just go ahead and pick on it.
So can you name some of the great companies in the space in San Diego? Because not a lot of our listeners know much about this space. Just five or six.
Well, you know, one of the challenges of running an association like Biocom is that you're always, when you do this, you're always leaving somebody out.
And I'll do the disclaimer. Joe's not leaving anybody out on purpose. I only told him he could do five or six.
But you know what? I'll talk about a few that are some of the world leaders. San Diego, first of all, is without a doubt the world leader in doing genetic sequencing and developing the equipment and the laboratory kits that are used to do genetic sequencing. So we've got a couple of companies here, one called Illumina, one called Life Technologies, that are clearly world leaders in the sequencing arena. And they have slightly different technologies. They'd probably tell you they have radically different technologies that compete with each other. But it's a great thing to have here in San Diego. And then if you go back historically, we've had companies here like Hybritech, one of the first biotech companies that developed the PSA test for prostate cancer. Agaron, that developed the first drug to treat HIV and AIDS effectively. IDEC, that developed Rituxan to treat non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Amylin, that developed a drug called Byetta to treat diabetics and to basically better modulate blood glucose. So a lot of successes over time. You know, on average, it takes about 15 years to develop a new drug, and the cost is now approaching about $2 billion for each new drug that we develop.
Wow, it used to be $100 million. Is it $2 billion for one?
Yeah, the failure rate is about one company in ten that actually gets a drug into the clinic actually gets to the end. So it's a very risky business. Some people say you could do as well going to Las Vegas, but you don't have the satisfaction of knowing that you're saving lives when you're rolling the dice in Las Vegas.
Plus the odds are less than one in ten there.
True.
But anyway, well, it's great to know that we are making a big difference here, and it is such a big part of our economy. In terms of percentage, what would you say? It's 30% of our GDP here in San Diego?
Well, it's hard to say. It's hard to say, but one of the things that that I like to tell people is that the biotech industry in San Diego, even though it's about 25, 30 years old, it's still, relatively speaking, in its infancy.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're doing a lot better over time and actually seeing companies that are turning out drugs and diagnostics and devices and having some sales and contributing to the economy.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got more predictive tools as well that can be used to do clinical trials more effectively, and I think that's going to make a difference down the road. I know you're probably going to talk about personal genetic medicine in a while, and that's going to be making a huge contribution to our ability to develop drugs and do more predictive work in drug development down the road as well.
That's great, Joe. Anyway, we've reached the first half of our show, but Joe Panetta, President and CEO of Biocom, biocom.org, get over there and check it out. We'll be right back with more of our show after this. We are back with It's Your Money and Your Life, live from La Vie. Over to Richard to thank our sponsors.
Thank you, sponsors. I've really been thanking you guys. I've been passing out $100 restaurant gift certificates, not to here. I'm sorry, lovely La Vie, but La Vie, very much appreciated. Absolutely gorgeous events going on here tonight at La Valencia. Couldn't do it without you guys. Thank you very much. Mike Carancha and Drew Freitas with UBS. It was good to see you guys this week. Very much appreciate UBS's support. We're right across the street from UBS, Regions Bank, the best business bank here in San Diego. Steve Sefton and Sean Puckett. Law offices of Brenda Geiger. I saw her this week as well. I was a very busy guy working this week. Hate it when that happens near the end of the year, but that's the way it goes in this business. So, Brenda, thank you. Our favorite CPAs on the planet, Paul Polito, Don Epic with Polito Epic CPAs up in Vista, Jason Kruger with Signature Analytics, the best CFO company west of the Mississippi. My favorite real estate expert on the planet, Joel Grushkin with Cost Segregation Initiatives, helping real estate owners improve their cash flow so they can give more money to scientific research. And Berkeley Research Group, Carl Sheeler, best business valuation company on the planet. And if you're a business owner and want to improve the value of your business by reducing your risk, Carl Sheeler with Berkeley Research Group is where you want to go. And our newest sponsor, Servant Leadership Institute. That's servantleadershipinstitute.com. Check out their website. They're having their winter conference right here in town on February 4th and 5th. You can join leadership superstars like Dick Enberg, Ken Blanchard, and Stephen Covey at that event, servantleadershipinstitute.com. Thank you. Joe, how can our great listeners learn more about our great sponsors?
Well, if they get over to our website at iymoney.com, click on sponsors, all their personal information is there, their background, their contact information, and they're all tops in their field and great collaborators of yours, right, Richard, with a lot of great results over the years?
Yeah, when I add up all the years, it's 200 and something. It's a depressing thought.
Merry Christmas.
My hair wasn't gray when we started, but now it is many years later.
But anyway, continuing in our biomed vein, we've got two people who are tops in their fields, medical researchers, MD, PhDs. You can't get any more degrees than these folks, I think, in terms of medical research. And the first guest is he earned his PhD from UCSD in 1976. And he held fellowships in biology, medicine, and neurosciences later, joined the faculty at UCSD. And in 1988, he was recruited to the Sanford Burnham Medical Research Institute. His name is Dr. Hudson Freeze. Hudson, how are you tonight?
Very well, Joe. Thanks.
Yeah, good to have you.
Thanks for the invitation.
Joe, it was supposed to be ladies first.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Well, let me get right to our next guest. She earned her PhD also in the biomedical sciences at UCSD in 1999, and she received her postdoctoral training in juvenile diabetes at UCSD in 2003, appointed assistant professor, Department of Pediatrics, and maintains her UCSD as her primary affiliation. She's been one of the prime researchers in diabetes and pancreatic cancer, and her name is Dr. Pamela Itkin Ansari. Hi, Pam. How are you tonight?
Hi. Great to be here.
Yes.
Thanks.
So this is just great having this kind of brain power in the room and talking about what the challenges facing the medical industry here. What are some of the thoughts that are on your mind?
Well, I think the biggest thing that troubles me in general is that we have to spend so much of our time now, instead of doing science, we have to write grants all the time. And the reason for that is because the National Institutes of Health, that's a federally funded agency that has kept the U.S. as the number one research country in the world,
mm-hmm.
starting in the late 40s when it was created, we are now almost abdicating our leadership. And the reason is because we are unable to get sufficient funding to fund projects that are good ideas, that everyone knows are good ideas, and I'll tell you how we know that. And so it used to be that about 30% of the grants were funded by the NIH, National Institutes of Health, and now it's around 10% of the grants. And you say, well, maybe they were too generous before. Maybe, you know, you just are not as good as you used to be. Well, that's not exactly true, because we have more people who are coming up with more ideas, and those are evaluated by peer reviews. So in other words, other scientists are sitting around who know the field and know the kinds of things that you're proposing. They pass judgment. And to make it into the 20% or 25% that get funded is not a small task. And it's like you getting your awards that you get. That's peer review. So everybody listens to what you do and then says, this is important. Mm-hmm. So now what's happening is that it's very difficult for people to have enough funding to consistently sustain themselves, even though they may have been funded for 10 or 20 years and done really excellent work, groundbreaking work. Mm-hmm. They're finding it difficult to get funded. And now the U.S. is starting to slip behind. And that's a matter of national security.
Is it the financial crisis that government's facing in general, the debts, deficits, all of that? Or?
Well, you know, I think we can be encouraged a little bit because Congress has been able to reach a budget deal here recently to move forward. And the reason we're in the problem state that we're in is because of the cutback in the amount of dollars. And that is a direct outgrowth of the general shrinking, the attitude of shrinking government. But I view medical research really as an investment. And all the things that Joe talked about earlier would not have been possible had fundamental research not been done 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago. And is a long pipeline. It takes us a long time to get there. But if you stop the pipeline or you cut it down to a trickle, the industry that has been so successfully built in San Diego is going to have difficulty moving forward. So I think we're at a point now where we can still make our case, influence people, especially politicians who are on committees that will make the decisions over the next actually few weeks as to what the budget of the NIH is going to be. And from my standpoint, at least, it's time to write your congressman all over the country and say, we support NIH. In fact, there's a particular site that you can go to that has a good letter that you can customize for yourself. So if you go to www.faseb, that's F-A-S-E-B, .org. They have all the information you need there and will explain to you the importance of medical research and how this later results in companies.
But the conundrum is, just from my perspective as a layman who call me a patient, I want more control over my own health and my health care decisions, and one might argue that the Affordable Health Care Act, commonly known as Obamacare, is an attempt to give people more control over their own health, yet it takes, 15 years to get a lot of solutions to market. Which suggests that if you happen to be somebody who has an issue where you have 1 or 2 or 3 years to work on your issue and there isn't a solution, that if it's going to take 15 years to get there, that's not very good for you.
Yeah.
So how on earth do we, I mean, you talk about money, but how on earth do we speed things up? Is it money only?
No, it's not only money. A lot of science, you can say, unfortunately, is a matter of luck. And, you know, we sort of hate to talk about that and use the word luck, but in fact, it's the truth. Because you don't know where the next breakthrough is coming from. And as an example, I'll just use one that I was able to participate in. So back in the 60s, I was an undergraduate student who went to Yellowstone National Park to work in the hot springs and to see if we could understand why bacteria were able to grow in those springs. And it didn't look like it had any applications. There was nothing you could really do with all this stuff. Well, you fast forward about 20 years, and the organism that I isolated was used to get an enzyme that then went on to yield a Nobel Prize and completely restructure the whole field of genetics. And we could have never predicted any of that from the kinds of things that we were doing back then. So you never know where there's going to be a breakthrough of one field or another, and it's just oftentimes chance. However, the chance is important to take, and that's why you have to fertilize broadly. And then also you need those directed issues, as you say, if you're a patient who has a short time span, you need to be able to think there's going to be something coming. And we can't always guarantee it, but we know that we're moving along in that direction.
Well, that's great. Then we'll get to Pam, and we're going to take a break right now. We'll come right back with more of It's Your Money in Your Life live from RV right after this. Hang on. All right, we're back with the last segment of our show, and I wanted to thank Rena Horowitz, especially, and Doreen Schoenbrunn and their group of 12. They put on a monthly program at Sanford Burnham Medical Research Institute, which is outstanding, and they are very much responsible for tonight's show, because I would not have met these guests without their wonderful input and all the great work they do. So thank you. And now Dr. Pamela Itkin Ansari is with us. And what are some of the you're working on some significant breakthroughs in pancreatic cancer and diabetes, correct?
Yes, and it is a true Dickens plot right now. It's the best of times and the worst of times.
Hmm.
Technologically, it's heaven to be a scientist. We can do now in a week, for instance, with our Conrad Prebys Center for Genomic Screening Center, what it might have taken a year to do 25 years ago.
Mm.
But as Hud Freeze and Joe Panetta have been telling you, it can take us a year or two to raise the money to do it.
Mm.
So there's that frustration. And as Richard brought up, what about patients who are ill now? Well, somebody who has pancreatic cancer right now, it would be very discouraging for them to hear that it's difficult for us to raise money for this research because they're worried about being alive next year.
Mm. Yeah.
So this is something we scientists think a lot about. And in fact, my humble colleague here, Hud Freeze, he's actually developed a therapy that is keeping kids alive right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is, of course, the passion that we feel and what keeps us working nights and weekends.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that one of the things people probably don't realize is that even on an individual level, they can make a difference in funding. We have some extremely generous donors in San Diego who've made a huge difference. But even people who normally would give to a national organization, it is possible to give to one of the nonprofits in San Diego, mm-hmm. and even earmark money for the research that you care about or even a particular laboratory. And so there's an opportunity for the public to be even more involved than they have been before. And just as Hud was mentioning, to reach out to our congresspeople, but also really people can take a place in helping move research forward,
mm-hmm.
and really follow in the path of some of these very generous donors that we've had in our city.
So two thoughts about funding. Obviously, we'll comment on both, but I'm going to go in order, and then you can answer. Crowdfunding, or what we call crowdsourcing in one case. And the other one is we're about 10 days away from the end of the year. We have a lot of wealthy families that have their own foundations, which have to pay out 5% of their asset value every year. They usually wait until the end of the year to do things because they're like me, everything always at the end. And in many cases, they tend to focus on not the kinds of shall we say research and so on that you're talking about, because they're not really aware that these opportunities exist. So their gifting patterns might be more what we call traditional towards charities that are great but don't really have implications for doing anything other than just serving existing constituents, as opposed to, for example, advancing medical discovery and so on. Can you comment about crowdfunding as well as maybe opportunities for families with foundations to contribute?
Maybe I'll say something quick about the families. It's really a wonderful point that you raise. You know, before 1920, we couldn't keep a child with type 1 diabetes alive. So really, this country has mm-hmm. done amazing things in working toward cures for diseases. And so it's wonderful that you mention that people can get involved and be part of this, really making a difference in whether or not we can develop these therapies. And also, as we've been talking about, any money that's donated to these nonprofits, well, now we're talking about keeping a job here in San Diego, mm-hmm. right? A postdoctoral fellow. We talk a lot about getting kids interested in science, and I've done a lot of outreach myself to elementary, junior high, high school. But right now in my lab, I have discouraged undergrads, graduate students, and postdocs because they took the advice to go into science, and now they don't see a clear path for themselves. So, Hud, I'm going to turn it over to you to make some comments, too.
Well, yeah, I've been pretty fortunate to get some families who have donated specifically to the lab. And, you know, that's very generous. And I think part of the reason they've done that is they've heard about our lab, their family member is affected by the diseases that I study, and they come to me to hear about this. And I think it's so important for scientists to be able to talk everyday folks' language. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's what I try to do. I try to connect with the families and then get really their understanding is important to me. So we have a two-way street back and forth, and that's important to keep our lab going and alive, because sometimes, you know, it's not sustainable just with federal funding. So I'll go out and talk to any family that is interested in trying to do something to promote research.
And you're one of the preeminent authorities in this glycosylation, correct? And can you briefly just tell us what that's about? I mean, you've done some marvelous things.
We don't have
things.
Too many listeners who know that word, Hud.
Yeah. Yeah. Now we've gotten out of the everyday conversation. Except in extraordinary measures, Harrison Ford plays a part of a researcher, and he says, "What's the matter, Sal? You're not up on your glycobiology." And so at least the word is out there in the public domain. Really what that is a study of sugars, not diabetes, the kind of thing that Pam may work on, but more about sugars that are on cell surfaces that help cells communicate with each other and know where they are in the body and know how to signal to themselves and to other cells. And so there are now over 100 diseases, genetic disorders of where this stuff goes wrong. The wrong sugar is put in the wrong place. It's incomplete. Somehow there's not enough of it made. And there are all kinds of different maladies that come out of it. And so this is what our lab studies. And we've actually, as you pointed out, Joe, been able to come up with some therapies that are very, very simple mm-hmm. to help patients and actually keep them alive.
Yeah. Outstanding. People should know sanfordburnham.org if they want to contact you or Pam, would like a tour of the lab, would like to learn more about how they can support or give or do anything they can to help out your organization. But sanfordburnham.org, and of course that Burnham is Malin Burnham, and that Sanford is Denny Sanford, and they've both been huge donors themselves. So,
and then terrific.
Yeah. I will say we had Malin on the show last June, I believe.
And that was fun.
And I asked him directly.
This is fun, though, too.
Yeah. I asked him directly. I said, out of all the causes that you've become involved in over your lifetime, which one has been the most rewarding for you? And he didn't hesitate in the moment. He said Sanford Burnham because of the I think, millions of lives that it's affected. You know, he's affected with the whole industry. So so our hats are
so everybody do some good income tax planning and okay, let's direct some funds to these, you know, what's going on here in San Diego, because
And then Pam, how about your diabetes? You've got some recent breakthroughs in your diabetes research, right?
Well, as I was saying, you know, when you think about it, really wasn't that long ago that we didn't know how to take care of kids with diabetes. And now I think with the advent of stem cells, and in particular what a great job California has done with the Stem Cell Initiative to fund this work, we have the opportunity to replace the cells that these kids don't have. And our lab has been working on that type of therapy. So it's very exciting. And I mean, I know a little boy who, by the time he was six, he'd had 10,000 insulin shots.
Huh.
And he'd had his fingers pricked 16,000 times to test his blood sugar.
Wow.
So what we really hope is we can make having diabetes invisible to him by replacing the cells he's missing. And so as I said, the technology right now is so fantastic. We're so fortunate to be here now. And anyone who's ill now, better to be ill this year than 100 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
For sure.
Even if it's frustrating. So, yeah. Thank you so much.
Anyway, Justin, I think we're just about out of time. Isn't that correct? 50 seconds. So thank you so much, Dr. Hudson Fried, Dr. Pamela Ikinen-Ansari from Sanford Burnham Medical Research Institute, Joe Panetta, President and CEO of Biocom, Biocom.org. Get on their websites. Do something good. Richard, great seeing you. Have a great week. Merry Christmas and happy holidays, everybody. We'll see you next week on It's Your Money and Your Life, live from Lavi. Take care.